Chapter 19. Bleed.
Oh, holy throne!
Dower gasped.
Medic!
Bodies littered the deck of Lateral 39. Torn and bloody, they were strewn about like discarded dolls. The deck was spattered with blood, as though canisters of scarlet paint had been indiscriminately spilled. Moore ran forward.
You're cut, he said. What?
Dower reached up and felt blood on his face. A shard had sliced his temple above the eye. Another had gone through Moore's sleeve. His left hand was soaked in blood that was running out from under his cuff.
Oh, gack! What a fething mess!
Dower stammered. Lesp was the medic assigned to Gamma. He was already struggling to cope with a volume of simultaneous injuries, yelling for help from troopers in Gamma who had corpsman training or any first aid skills. Soldiers were setting down their weapons to run forwards and assist. Others looked on at the devastation, aghast. Blood spray from the injuries had dappled the faces of many of them. One unlucky lasman in the front row, a new influx man called Gorgi, had been killed outright by a fragment between the eyes. All three clearance teams were decimated. Some were alive and struggling to get up, dazed. Others lay still, apparently dead. All of them were soaked in blood.
Strike Gamma! Strike Gamma!
Dower yelled, grabbing the vox from Moore.
We have multiple injuries in Lateral 39! Multiple injuries!
Say again, Captain!
Beltane responded.
Are you under fire? Are you reporting hostile contact?
Negative. Drill accident. Multiple laceration casualties. We need medics from the ship's infirmaries here now!
Captain, can you proceed?
Assessing now. Stand by.
Dower gazed around in horror. Major Pasha's team, the primary, had been slashed to pieces. Lesp was trying to staunch injuries to Pasha's throat and face, while the corpsman, Fainer, applied compression to the wounds in Nessa's upper arms and legs. Both women were bleeding profusely. Raglan was curled in a ball, gasping and choking, yet barely had a scratch on him. A razor-sharp filament had gone through his torso, puncturing a lung. Zell and Marakov were dead. Marakov's head had been sliced in half diagonally, from the left corner of his jaw to his right temple, like some immaculate biological sample. The missing piece of his head lay a few metres behind him, internal side down on the deck, so it looked like a small part of someone surfacing out of a pool. Zell's torso was shredded and his left arm detached. Dower stepped forward, numb, and killed the feed of Zell's fallen flamer. The second team, Polo's, was as bad. Polo had suffered a huge scalp wound that was bleeding copiously, as well as significant wounds to his arms. Bright red blood beaded his dark skin. Questa, the marksman, had taken lacerations to his hands and thighs. A needle sliver of metal the length of a man's forearm impaled his hip. Mags was whining in rage and frustration, clutching a bloody stomach wound. Polo's sweeperman, Buron, had been cut in two through the waist. Nitori, his flame trooper, was also dead, so covered in blood it was impossible to tell which of his wounds had proved lethal. The third team, Haller's, was covered in the blood of the first two. Haller was looking down at his battle dress, astonished at the gore spattering him, amazed that none of it seemed to belong to him. Mert had taken a scratch, but had rushed to Nessa's aid. Wagner, the scout, was virtually unmarked. His mouth was open, as if he couldn't find anything adequate to say. Vadim put down his sweeper broom to help Raglan, but immediately fell over. A flying shard had cut his Achilles tendon. Belloc, a usually cheerful new influx Vervenhiver, was ashen as he tried to unbuckle his flamer unit so he could assist.
"Leave that on!" Vadim hissed. "What?"
Belloc replied.
"He's right," said Dower. "Team 3's got to move in first. Haller! Haller!"
Haller jumped.
"What? Yes!"
he said, blinking.
"The door's open!"
Dower said, glancing at Pasha. Despite her miserable wounds, she managed to nod.
"We've got to move in before this prong of the assault collapses completely. We have to proceed, Haller."
Yes, all right, said Haller.
trying to regain his wits, incapacitated by shock. But Vadim's out. I've got no sweeper man. Dower breathed deeply to control his panic response. I need a replacement sweeper here. A volunteer, right now. Most of the strike Gamma Force had come forwards to help the injured. Those that couldn't actually help were just looking on in dismay. They glanced at each other dumbly. That's an order, Hark yelled, moving in beside Dower. A flying filament had nicked his cheek like a nasty shaving cut. The Emperor expects. Captain Dower needs a sweeper. Come on. A good one, Dower added. He could see the problem already. Gamma and Beta had selected the six best sweepers under Raglon and Domor. There were other ghosts who understood basic operation, but the most skillful operators in the lateral hold and the best trained were the ones lying dead or hurt on the deck in front of him.
I can do it, said Mags, wincing.
Shut up and wait for the medics, Dower snapped.
I'll do it, growled Hark. I know how they work.
Haller coughed. He wiped specks of someone else's blood off his pale skin.
No, it has to be me, he said. I was the first reserve on the training list.
Dower nodded. Haller was right. When they'd been making the selections for the clearance teams, Haller would have been made a sweeper if he hadn't worked so hard for a team command.
You're right, Dower said. Take Noah's kit. Check it works. I'll lead you in.
He turned to Hark.
You and Specknin have acting command here, Hark. See if you can assemble a functioning second clearance and send them in. Then bring the troops in if I signal.
Hark nodded.
And for Thrawn's sake, get more medics.
I will, said Hark.
Come on, ghosts! Move!
Dower said. He turned and walked towards the borehole. Mert followed, with Wagner and Haller. Belloc buckled his flamer tank and went after them. Vadim's Auspex set had been damaged, so Haller had taken Raglon's instead. Dower heard Haller quietly promising Raglon he'd look after his precious kit and bring it back, though Raglon was probably too far gone with pain and disorientation to hear him. Dower reached the borehole. He glanced up at the ragged tear around the rim, the silver split of metal that had just compromised Strike Gamma's effectiveness, perhaps beyond any hope of recovery. He activated his lamp pack.
Holofernes waded into the Sons of Sek. He had harnessed his bolt gun and, with spear and shield, was laying waste to them. Body parts and fragments of severed weapons flew out from his spinning blade. Shields up, Sarath and Edwine continued the advance into the withering enemy fire. Firing over their shields, they were trying to break the Sons holding the next hatchway section. Their boarding shields quaked and shook under the deluge of fire. Most of the surface decoration markings and the purity seals had been seared off. Edwine reloaded. He issued quick vox commands that brought the gun servitors in at their flank.
Rush them, he suggested to the White Scar. While the snake is holding our left flank, why not?
Sarath replied.
We need weight behind us, said Edwine. The damned guard are slow. Adequate supporting fire would allow us to push ahead.
They will get here in their own sweet time, replied Sarath.
Their own sweet time is not good enough, said Edwine.
Kolia was pinned behind a processor unit, enduring some of the worst crossfire he had ever known. It whined and streaked around him, slamming off the metal casing of the unit, puncturing and buckling it. Two ghosts had already died trying to cross the open depot floor to join him. The Sons of Sek were intent on containing the invasion force in the outer compartments that the Caestus had penetrated. They were positioning to block them, shut them out, and then drive them back into the hard vacuum. Kolia had several company strengths behind him, but none was in any kind of position to advance and deliver firepower. As for the Space Marines, they had plunged ahead regardless. Kolia was physically unable to render them any support. Indomitable as they were, the Space Marines would soon be cut off, surrounded and ultimately overwhelmed. They were the spearhead of the weapon, the tip of the sword. It didn't matter how sharp it was. A sword still needed a strong arm behind it. Kolia had no doubt the Space Marines would pile body on body before they finally fell. But in the end, they would still die. Electromagnetic distortion from the torrential gunfire, especially the hell guns and plasma weapons fielded by the Suns, was chopping all Vox exchanges. Kolia could barely coordinate with the other squad and company leaders. He'd lost sight of Rerval during a particularly fierce barrage, and he hadn't got a reply from Edwine or the other Space Marines for 20 minutes. The focus of the enemy fire shifted away from him, like a rainstorm passing overhead. He looked to his left, across the burning litter and destruction of the ravaged depot space, and saw Ferdi Kolosim's company being driven back into cover behind a row of huge steel bunkers. They left their dead on the deck behind them.
"Kolia!"
His vox crackled.
"Go!"
Kolia responded. The vox burbled something else indistinct. He looked to his right, in time to see a couple of shoulder-launched rockets whoosh up from the guard lines into the upper part of the depot chamber. They blew out a row of generator pumps and hurled the bodies of several Suns into the air. Heavy, clacking fire, some of tracer rounds zipped from .30s and .50s. Baskerville's company, D, was attempting to push forward from the hangar space. They hadn't come through the hole the ram had punched. They'd forced the internal hatches and surged through under the cover of gantries and service walkways. The arch-enemy line, taking D Company's fire, withered slightly and tried to retrain. Kolia saw Baskerville get up and lead a rush towards some heavy manufacturing engines that stood in a row across the centre of the depot's decking. Plasma fire streaked into them immediately. Kolia winced, head down, as he saw three or four ghosts cut down. Then some rockets fell too, screeching down out of the vault, and the gritty blast wash knocked Kolia back. The last thing he glimpsed was Baskerville's burning body thrown headless into the air. Blinking, dizzy from the concussion, Kolia looked around. Fury was filling him, rage at the losses and the helpless state of their situation. He saw Merrin and some of his force pinned around another row of processors.
"Move up! Move up!" he yelled. "Into the feathers, Captain!"
Merrin didn't appear to be able to hear him over the roar of the firefight. His men were pinking off shots in a feeble manner, their heads down. Something snapped. No longer really thinking rationally, Kolia got up. He hefted up his shield and ran at the arch-enemy position, leaping debris and bodies, firing his las rifle through the shield's slot. Somehow, he didn't die. Afterwards, he could not account for it. It was a story he would tell when suitably persuaded and after an amasek or two for the rest of his life. Kolia was destined to live out a soldier's life, so that wasn't a terribly long time. But it was long enough to make that day, that moment, an old story. Others told it in turn, after his death. Kolia, running the line like a madman, shield up, gun blasting. He was yelling something as he went, and depending who was telling the tale, what he yelled varied. Some said it was the Vervenhive battle cry, others the founding oath. Some said he was cursing the names of Dower and Rawn and everyone else who'd drawn the easy option of the gamma and beta insertions. The truth was, he was probably yelling the name of his friend, Baskerville. It was a wild action and utterly lacking in discipline, especially given that Kolia was the force commander and should have been setting a measured and sober example to the ranks. Kauber said it was exactly the sort of fething idiot stunt Colonel Corbeck used to pull. That was why Kauber got up and followed him. Derren did too, and Lies, Neith and Stark, and Irvin, Buell, Vedekin, Werson and Vanette. Ludd, who should have been ready to reprimand Kolia for reckless deportment, got up and charged as well.
"Men of Tanith!" Ludd yelled. "Straight silver!"
Most of C Company broke and charged after their commanding officer, and so did a decent section of D Company and Kolosim's H Company.
Merrin's company was mostly pinned, but a chunk of that also broke and sprinted after Collier. Dallin led these men, bayonet fixed. Some versions of the story, later ones, insisted that not a single ghost who took part in that gloriously foolish and improvised charge, Collier's charge, fell or took so much as a scratch. This was not true. Plenty died or were maimed. The Sons of Sek were not so astonished that they forgot to keep shooting. The charge left almost 40 dead or injured on the depot floor. Nevertheless, it hit the Sons like a tidal wave and broke their line. Collier was first over the barricades. In his mindless haste, he had forgotten even to fix his silver, so he shot the enemy instead, point blank, smashing with his shield, clubbing with his stock. The men behind him were slightly more composed. They came in with bayonets up, stabbing and spearing the Sons of Sek from behind their pockmarked shields. Some lobbed grenades over the front row into the support groups, blowing yellow uniformed brutes off their feet. A couple of flamers belched spears of liquid fire into the arch-enemy ranks. Figures staggered on fire like ritual straw doll offerings, shuddered, fell. Collier killed 8 of the enemy troops before he ran out of strength and dropped to one knee, panting, astonished by the sudden realization of his own madness and, more, at the fact that he was still alive in spite of it. The charging ghosts swarmed in around him, fracturing the enemy masses and driving them back along the defence barricade in both directions. Collier had renegotiated the map of the battlefield and broken the impasse.
"Are you alive?"
asked Dallin, helping him up. Collier nodded.
"I mean, sir,"
Dallin added. Collier laughed.
"That was madness," Dallin said.
"Yes, well, it runs in the family, so be warned," Collier replied.
Ghosts jostled past, forcing deeper, securing the position and firing on the retreating Sons. Ludd and Collism supervised the new deployment, yelling orders.
"You're quite insane," said Baskerville, slapping Collier's arm. "Probably get a bloody medal, though."
Collier stared at him.
"You,"
he began.
"What? You were hit, I saw you."
"Not me," said Baskerville.
"The rockets, they came down right in amongst tea. I saw you, you..."
Baskerville grimaced.
"I lost 8 men. Goodler was right beside me, got his head blown off."
"I thought it was you."
Baskerville laughed.
"Damn it, Gull. You charged the Sons of Sek because you thought I was dead."
"I was angry."
"He probably wants to marry you," said Collism, running past them.
"Major Collier,"
Ludd shouted.
"We need some orders here."
Collier ran over to Ludd, assessing how best to disperse the ghosts from the new positions that they had just taken. Though in hard retreat, the enemy was still laying down heavy fire.
"We need to find exit points," Collier told Ludd. "Drive on through. The Space Marines expect us to support them, and we're lagging badly."
Ludd nodded.
"Maybe we can bring up some tread feathers," he suggested, pointing. "Punch a hole there and there by that silo. Then we can advance under shields."
He broke off. Just ahead of them, Sons of Sek were moving. Their unit discipline had vanished.
"Faith me,"
Ludd exclaimed.
"Are they countercharging us?"
"No," said Collier. "They're running."
A whole section of the retreating arch-enemy line had broken and scattered towards Collier's force. The advancing ghosts began picking them off, amazed by the sudden opportunity. Explosions drove the Sons forwards into the Tanith field of fire. It was a brief but sustained slaughter.
"Look!"
Ludd cried. The white scar, Saraf, appeared out of the smoke, driving the breaking arch-enemy troopers in front of him. He was blasting with his bolt gun, disrupting their unit cohesion and driving their line around so that it buckled and withered under the ghost's fire. He spotted Collier.
"What is keeping you?"
Saraf bellowed.
"We were occupied," Collier yelled back.
"With what?"
"The usual,"
shouted Collier. Saraf shrugged his huge shoulder plates. He turned
and blasted bolt rounds into the weakened enemy positions to his right.
"Come on, if you are coming," he yelled. "We will not wait any longer. I told Edwin I would come back to find out if you had a good excuse for not keeping up."
"Like what?"
"Like being dead. Now, come on, Emperor curse you."
The White Scar began to move towards the depot's main rear hatches. The deck was covered in enemy dead. The hatchway was broken and buckled. Smoke threaded the air in dense, noxious walls. Kalia turned to the advancing strike force.
"Double time!" he yelled. "Put your backs into it! I've got a battle to win, and I don't intend to fight it on my own!" "Despite evidence to the contrary," said Baskerville.
The deep interior of the Reach was dark and cold. Dower's team moved through the dank chambers and rusting tunnels, edging a few metres at a time, picking a path. Mert's rebreather had become a hindrance, and he'd taken it off. Soon afterwards, the others had ditched theirs too. The chilly, metallic air was infinitely preferable to the sweaty, claustrophobic limits of the masks. Haller was edgy. He was painfully conscious of how much depended on him reading the sweeper's scope right. He played the broom back and forth with infinite care.
"Just do it right," said Dower. "Don't overdo it."
Haller nodded to his friend, loosened his collar, and moved on. Eerie breezes murmured along the ancient, twisting tunnels. The burner of Belloc's flamer jumped and fluttered. In some places it was so dark that even the twitching light of the flamer cast their shadows up the rotting walls.
"Wait!"
said Haller suddenly. His scope had started clucking. They held position while he moved the broom. Mert quietly loaded a saline charge into his old rifle. He'd injected the muscle relaxant into his jaw again, and it was numb, but the second dose made the muscles in his neck and lower back ache.
"There," said Haller, studying the scope while he pointed. "Left side, wired along."
"Left side, fired along," Wagner repeated, looking through his hand scope and running the passive tagger.
"Whoa, you've overshot," warned Haller. "There, behind that bulkhead."
They got the lamps on it. 20 metres away, four squat munition boxes were stacked up behind a bulkhead support. Cables ran back under the seam of the deck to pressure plates directly in front of them.
"One more step would have been bad," said Haller.
Dower nodded. Wagner was moving the tagger beam around.
"Look there," he said.
Close to the device, a hair-thin trip line was threaded across the deck at ankle height. If somehow you stepped over the pressure trap, a second surprise awaited you. Wagner put the tagger back on the firing pin, screwed into the top of the boxes.
20.18 metres, he said.
Mert lined up and locked his scope to the tagger Wagner was supplying. 20.18 metres. A breeze came up in their faces, with a slight lift to it. He wanted to swallow, but his jaw and throat were too numb. He snuggled in, the rifle held firmly but not too tightly. Everything in his life since that moment, in the jungle on Monthax, everything had been about this moment, this shot. He felt sick.
"Good," said Dower. "Good shot, Wren."
Mert blinked. A wisp of smoke was trailing from his rifle. He'd taken the shot. He'd been in the zone so completely, he hadn't even noticed it.
"Perfect," said Wagner, checking through his scope. "You sheared the firing cap right off."
Haller moved forwards. The deck plate trigger was dead. He disengaged the tripwire, removed the trigger, and sprayed inert gel into the device. Then he marked out warnings in red chalk.
"Think you can do that again?"
Dower asked Mert. Mert signed an affirmative. He wanted to whoop with satisfied delight, but his jaw was too numb.
"Let's make up some time," said Dower. "Got another one here,"
Haller called out, sweeping the junction ahead of them. Mert chambered a fresh round.
"This should help with the pain a little,"
"'Well, we get you to the infirmary,'
Dordan told Nessa. She nodded and tried to smile at him as he gave her the shot. Her multiple cuts were field-dressed. Patches of blood were already showing through the bandages.
"'You shouldn't be here,' Hark said.
Dordan got up from his patient, unsteady for a moment. He looked up at the commissar and gestured to the scene that lay around them in lateral hold 39.
"'The dead and dying surround us, Victor, and barely enough medics to cope. How better could I spend my time?'
"'You know what I mean,' said Hark.
"'No, actually,' said Dordan. "'Should I go off somewhere quietly and wait to die so I don't become an inconvenience, or can I use what little life and skill I've got left to help the regiment?'
Hark shook his head. There was triage and field surgery going on all around them. Lesp was fighting to save Raglan's life. Medicae from Spiker's crew were working on Mags and Vadim.
"'I was sitting in the infirmary, Victor,' said Dordan. "'I heard the casualty alert. Old habits.'
"'We appreciate your efforts,' said Hark.
"'Let him work,' said Zweel. "'He just annoys the shit out of me when he hasn't got anything to do.'
The Ayatani bent down to whisper last rites to Marakov.
"'When do you go in?'
Dordan asked.
Hark shrugged. "'We're running way behind schedule, thanks to this mess,' he replied.
"'Captain Dower's taken a clearance team in. "'We're waiting for him to signal us to follow.'
Hark glanced over at Moore and Captain Spetnan.
Both shook their heads. Dordan fished in his medical satchel to get some dressings for Major Pasha.
"'Waiting's the worst part, isn't it?'
he said. Hark agreed, but he had a queasy feeling he knew what the old regimental doctor was really talking about. Mert took his fourth shot in 15 minutes. The saline round punched the trigger cap clean out of the suspended tank of explosives. Perfect. 4 for 4. Haller moved forwards to make the device safe and mark it up.
"'Major tunnel route opening up ahead,' said Wagner.
"'We've cleared quite a way,' said Belloc.
Dower nodded. Maybe they had caught up a little time on Strike Beta after the disastrous start.
"'I'll signal them to follow up,' he said.
He adjusted his link.
"'Dower to Gamma. Dower to Gamma.'
"'Gamma here, Captain,'
Moore answered.
"'Instruct Hark and Spetnin to start leading the strike inside,' said Dower. "'Follow the mark route and go slow.'
"'Understood.
"'Inform command, we are deploying.'
"'Understood.'
Dower looked at the others.
"'Let's clear a little more of this path, shall we?' he said.
"'Strike, Gamma!'
Spetnin yelled in his thick, Vergestite accent.
"'Get up and get ready to deploy!'
"'We're going in!'
Hart called out, walking the line as the ghosts assembled.
Squad order! Get ready!
The Emperor go with you!
Major Pasha croaked to Hark, her throat bandaged. Hark nodded.
Come on!
Spetnin cried.
Where are you going?
Hark asked Dordan.
Intending to advance without a medic, eh?
Asked Dordan.
Oh, Throne, come on, Doctor. I haven't got time for this.
Lesp can't leave his patient.
Dordan said quickly.
He's got his hands full. I trained him well. So he's not about to walk off in the middle of surgery. I'm your only option. And the rule book states...
Don't quote regulations at me, Doctor, said Hark. You're not strong enough and you're not fit enough.
Of course he isn't,
snapped Zweel.
He's dying, you pompous ass. Look at him. He's wasted away. He's almost see-through. He's so skin and bone...
Let him have this much for Fith's sake.
Father,
Hart began.
Don't you get it? Zweel asked. He doesn't want to die idle, and he doesn't want to die on his own.
Show him some respect, Father,
Hart growled.
Actually, I couldn't have put it better myself, said Dordan. That's all I'm afraid of, Victor. Dying in bed and thinking there was a little more I could have done.
Dordan stared at Hark. Hark found the pale, bright eyes hard to look into.
"'I swore,' said Dordan, "'on the founding fields at Tanith Magna, "'to serve the Imperial Guard and the Tanith First "'for the rest of my days.
are you, an Imperial Fething Commissar, really going to stand in the way of me performing that sworn duty? Because if you are, that's one staggering irony.
Get your things, said Hark.
Dordan looked at Sweel.
The Emperor protects, says Sweel. Even stubborn old bastards.
That's why I never worry about you, said Dordan.
Look, I'll see you later.
Of course you will, said the old priest.
Medic!
Kalia yelled. Kurth ran forwards along the line of cover, her head down in an instinctive posture that anyone who spent time on the battlefield quickly learned to adopt. She dropped in beside him. Fairly continuous gunfire ripped over their heads from the Sons of Sek positions in the vault chamber ahead. Crew-served weapons on either side of them rattled out return fire. Flamers roared.
"Are you hit?"
she asked.
"Not me,"
Kalia replied. He pointed at Fezekiel beside him. A shot had clipped her shoulder and flecked her face with blood.
"It's nothing," Fezekiel said.
"It's light, but it's bleeding a lot," said Kurth,
leaning in to dress it.
"You're no use to Gaul if you're faint from blood loss."
"Exactly what I told her," said Kalia, turning back to his scope.
"Yes, well, from what I hear, you're hardly demonstrating the most rational behaviour today," said Kurth.
She tore open a gauze pack.
"You heard about that, did you?" said Kalia. "It was the most amazing thing I ever saw," said Fezekiel,
wincing as Kurth packed her shoulder.
"I intend to have him shot for it later." "Are we winning yet?" asked Kurth as she worked.
Kalia shrugged. After the charge had re-established contact with the Space Marine push, Strike Alpha had made some serious ground, breaking through into a series of vast internal compartments beyond the hangar bay and the engineering depot. These vault chambers were towering spaces, like the insides of bulk manufactories. Huge machines filled their cavities. Kalia supposed they had something to do with atmosphere or gravitics. The archenemy had fallen back to dig in here. Sons of Sek, some Loxatl, along with cult troops and weaponized servitors, held the line across three vault chambers and harried the determined Imperial assault via the network of ducts and sallyports. Loxatl were also using the roof spaces and conduits to gain advantageous firing positions. Kalia's response was to systematically mine or burn out all ducts and hatches as they advanced, and scour the ceiling vaults and pipework with flamers. It slowed the whole force a little, but it was worth it. It was costly, however. H Company, under Elam, was busy ferrying munition restocks up through the line from the hangars, where the landers and lighters that had delivered the troops for the assault were returning with cargoes of ammunition, flamer tanks, charges and rockets. Some of the lighters were turning around to make their third run of the day. Jan Sloman scurried up.
"The brother sergeant wants you to know that he and his brethren are about to make another push," said Sloman.
"He could have told me on the link," said Kalia.
"He tried. Distortion's even worse in here." Kalia knew this was true. He'd had to send Rerval back through the depot to keep the Vox link open with the Armaduke and the other strikes. Rerval had seconded a team of runners to keep messages flowing.
"Did he give any idea how long before this would happen?" Kalia asked Sloman.
There was a punishing roar of cannon fire from the left of their position. Kalia knelt up to look behind his shield and saw the three Space Marines striding towards the thickest part of the enemy line. Their gun servitors came with them, weapon pods blazing. Withering fire rippled along the ranks of the Suns.
"That answers that question," said Kalia.
He gathered up his las rifle.
4, 9, 12, 13, ready on my left," he shouted. 8, 15, Vanette, you're mob too. Get up and get ready. Suppressing fire on my order. Rockets, please. Objective is that processor hub."
"You heard the commander,"
Fezekiel cried, getting to her feet and buttoning her coat.
"The Emperor's watching you. He's watching us all. He's relying on you today, so don't let him down. Numbered squads, as ordered. Load and get ready.
For Tanith! For Vergast! And for the fury of Belladon!"
Kalia howled.
into them!